Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddhang saranang gacchami, dhammang saranang gacchami, sanghang saranang gacchami. Dutiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami, dutiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami, dutiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami, tatiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami, tatiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami. So nice to see everybody here today, Tuesday night in August. Don't remember the date off the top of my head, otherwise I would say. So was just in Colonel Danforth Park before coming here, and think that I told the people last week, I actually met a guy there last week, and he was asking me kind of questions about Buddhism. And actually saw the same guy again today. He's he's kind of a neat guy. He's skateboarding, but I think he's like in his 50s, you know. So I never seen a 50-year-old skateboarder. And he was telling me that you know, he's been doing skateboarding for like 47 years. And he said back in his day they didn't and he said he'd been doing snowboarding for a long time too. And he said in his day they didn't have kind of snowboards, so you had to make your own. And so we were just saying hello and asked him, you know, how his weekend went. And he said, fine. And he asked me how mine went, and I said, you know, fine. And he said, you know, you do anything kind of special for the long weekend? And I was like, no, not really. I was just kind of here, you know, doing the same as usual, you know. And, you know, most of monastic life is actually like this, you know, as a monk, right? So sometimes we see kind of videos of monks in Tibet, and they're on like the edge of a rocky ledge, like overlooking the Himalayas. And it's just this incredible vista. And looks like, you know, something is always amazing is about to happen, right? Or they're, you know, maybe doing some like kung fu. I saw this movie, Bulletproof Monk, and this was years back. In the opening scene, they were doing like kung fu fighting on this bridge over over this kind of a rocky gorge. And actually, I had somebody come up to me one time, and he said, "Oh yeah, I love Buddhism. I saw the movie Bulletproof Monk." You know, I was like, "Okay, that's cool, but you know, I can't do any of that stuff, so don't expect me to do any backflips." And, you know, sometimes we read the stories of the, what they call the Kruba Ajans in Thai. And these stories are actually very amazing, very inspiring, you know, kind of stories where some of these monks are going in the forest and living the exact same way as they did in the time of the Buddha and just getting amazing results in their practice with incredible stories of their encounters with various beings out there, and of their own kind of meditative attainments, their own progress forward on the path. And so it's funny, I actually had a friend when I visited Thailand once. I had a friend there, and he was a new monk there, and he said, "Yeah, I showed up here." And I asked him, I was like, "So when are we going on Tudong?" And Tudong is this kind of wandering tour where you go through the forest with your bowl and robes, and you live on alms round, and you practice meditation at the foot of a tree. And this is what he read the kind of Thai forest tradition was about. So after reading that, he went there, and you know, he was there for a month or something. He's like, "So, you know, when are we going?" Because most of the time in a monastery, your routine, it's every day is pretty much the same. It's kind of doesn't change a lot. You know, your routine as a monk, you know, what you're actually doing during the day is pretty much the same, and to the extent that you probably wouldn't really make a movie about it. Yeah. Actually, there was this movie, Into Great Silence, they made about Catholic monks in this Carthusian monastery, and the whole movie, they're silent. Those monks are completely silent through the whole movie. But it's just the same thing every day. They have this mass, and then you know they're praying, and then they do their gardening, and that's it. And the same thing as a monk, you know, basically you have your morning routine, you know, you get up and you go for alms round and you come back and you're eating. And, you know, wherever you're living, you know, after a while, it's the same food, you know, and it goes in your bowl and then you eat it out of your bowl. And then after you're done eating, you clean up and then you might go and do some meditation. Sometimes monks will have a nap in the afternoon. Then you'll go do more meditation and study. And then at night you go to sleep. And then the next day you get up and do the same thing again. You know? And sometimes during that period, you know, when you're doing these things, you know, it's just the same thing every day, you'll come across something really interesting. You know, something that maybe, you know, you could put on Facebook. Some interesting encounter, meet some really interesting person, or, you know, something like that. But most of the time, it's just this kind of every day, you know, daily and daily doing the same thing over and over again. Just every single day, practicing the same way, every single day, doing pretty much the same routine. Yeah? So not something we really make a movie about. Yeah? And yet one of the interesting things is that there was this time when the king, you know, in the time of the Buddha, he came up to the Buddha and he said, you know, I've seen different ascetics and they live the holy life for, you know, 20, 30 years. And then they disrobe and you can see them kind of partying it up, having a good time after that. But he said, you know, I see your followers, the followers of the Buddha, and, you know, they're young, but they seem very happy to have gone forth, you know, living this kind of life with minds aloof like a wild deer, is how he said it. And so, of course, you know, not every single day as your monk is some, like, amazing, blissful experience. But this is the thing about practice, is that although we have these same routines all the time, these routines are designed with a purpose in mind. It's like a person who wanted to bore through a mountain. There's a huge, imagine there's this huge mountain. So in the Buddhist time, they would use these images called like yojana. A yojana is 21 kilometers. And they'd be like a mountain like four yojanas thick, you know, with solid rock, with nothing in it. And another mountain, you know, that mountain goes up, you know, another four yojanas high, you know, and then it goes down into the ground, you know, into the sea and the ground and the water, four yojanas down. It's kind of this immense body of rock. And so as a practitioner, when we come to try to engage in the practice of meditation and train our minds, one of the things that we develop an attitude is like boring through a mountain. We kind of, you know, we have this huge mountain to go through. And we don't know what's on the other side of it. You know? We don't know how long it's going to take us to bore through. But we know, you know, we've got these certain tools to start off with. You know, so maybe when we first start, we have this kind of very, you know, tiny auger, kind of maybe a little hammer and a chisel. And so the attitude that the teachers tell us to develop is one of patience, you know, kind of this attitude like an earthworm. You know? Most of the time, our days when we're boring through a mountain are going to be spent chipping away. It's not like, you know, every day we're chipping through the mountain, we're going to somehow kind of come across this, you know, amazing crevice, or we're going to have this amazing breakthrough in the rock, you know. And yet this is what our practice is like, you know. Actually, there are things in the world, you know, just in the normal day-to-day world that are like this, you know. So I remember when I was young, first going to university. And like when you first get there, it's this kind of overwhelming experience. It's kind of anybody who's been to, you know, first day of a totally new thing probably knows. And it was just this amount of work that I'd never... never kind of experienced before. You know, it's kind of a huge volume of work. And so when you first get there, it's this, all these new experiences, all these new things, all these new people. But then after a while, it becomes something routine. Most of your day, you're studying. You get up in the morning and you study. After lunch, you study. And then from time to time, you have an exam. And you're doing these courses on marketing, courses on finance, and sometimes you're kind of studying your course material, and it's like you're learning how to do math formulas, and you're like, I don't see how this, you know, when's this adding up, you know? But the amazing thing is that at the end of 3 or 4 years of doing this constantly day in and day out, without realizing it, you develop a large body of skills. Whatever a person's profession is, you know, going to university or to college or wherever, to an apprenticeship, for training. When you do this day in, day out, year after year, you know, day after day, month after month, then as long as we're moving forward, you know, in doing this, then the time comes when we look back and we're like, you know, I've developed a lot of skills here. There's a lot that's actually gone on here. And then the day comes when we're in university or college or apprenticeship, when we graduate, you know, from that particular level of training. It's kind of a day that nobody ever forgets. When they go through it, they have their kind of cap and gown or whatever it is, or, you know, they've got their certificate for their trade, and they're able to now go out into the world. It's kind of what they call like a peak moment, you know? And so these kind of peak moments are the things that, you know, people videotape, right? You're kind of, they're the things that when they get on Facebook, they'll get like, you know, a whole bunch of likes. Like, whoa, something, you know, really amazing just happened here, right? But those peak moments, they were actually built on a huge body of slow, steady, sustained practice. Day after day, month after month, year after year, you know? Nothing particularly flashy happening, nothing particularly interesting happening, but just slowly moving forward, just bit by bit. You know? And so we couldn't just, you know, if we just put on the cap and gown and had our friends print us out a diploma from the internet and we got it, you know, even if people believe that we'd actually graduated, a ceremony like that wouldn't be that meaningful. You know? Wouldn't really signify anything. We wouldn't really have the body of skills. In the same way, even if we thought to ourselves, okay, graduation ceremonies are really great, I'm gonna have one every day, you know? And so every day we printed out a diploma and put on our cap and gown and went out and, you know, went for this graduation ceremony. After the third or fourth day or whatever, it might start to seem a bit boring, you know? And yet the interesting thing is that sometimes, especially in economic philosophy, this is seen as kind of the purpose for which we're living our life, right? And we live our life almost for the sake of having one of these kind of peak moments, you know? It's like things are really boring, that's not really living, you know, that's kind of whatever it is. And then boom, there's a peak moment, right? And that's what we all, that's what can remember, you know? So then sometimes movies are based on this, you know, career paths sometimes based on this, you know, what's the next big thing? What's the next peak thing? So I remember when I was young, actually watching some of these movies, and it would go from like, you know, one crazy, amazing thing happening to another, you know. You see, watch these kind of Arnold Schwarzenegger movies. I think he's no longer making movies now. But there would be like an explosion at the beginning. He'd be fighting some impossible boss. And then it would go from like fighting a next one to a next one to a next one for like, you know, a couple hours. You're kind of totally on the edge of your seat, right? Just one kind of peak moment after the next. You know? That's what kind of sustains your attention in the film so you don't get kind of drawn out. And similarly, when I was living at a monastery and had to write a history for them about what went on in the monastery. And I was trying to think, you know, how can I make this, you know, history interesting, you know? And so I went online and looked up how people write books, and there's this method called the HCM method, which is the heart-catching moment method. And so what you do is you have very little material in between each what they call heart-catching moment. You know? So each, it just goes like, there'll be like a one really amazing thing, and then da-da-da, like a little gloss, and then next heart-catching moment. And you structure your story around releasing these heart-catching moments at kind of critical times. You always end the chapter with this kind of What's going to happen? You know, what's the, you know, at this you stop it at this critical moment where people don't know what the outcome of your heart-catching moment will be. And then the next chapter, you open it up with something really interesting. And then throughout the chapter, you're leading through these moments. And in between is quite a gloss. But the interesting thing about writing this history, again, is that I was there for most of the time that the history of this book took place. And although the book itself is made up of all these heart-catching moments, most of the time that actually built that monastery, built the community there, was just a lot of slow, patient, hard work. That's basically what it was. Yeah. So these kind of heart-catching moments, these kind of really amazing things, these explosions, those are things that are easy to, what they call, savor. You kind of get a feel for it. It's just this overwhelming sensory experience, you know? But we can actually change our perception of this a bit, because this is actually one of these things, these moments are great to have, but instead of just waiting to look for these moments, we can learn, instead of to savoring the experience that comes at the end of a lot of hard work, to savor the feeling of being a producer, you know? To savor the feeling of being somebody who enjoys developing a skill in meditation, developing a skill in training our mind. And so this is one of the things that, although, you know, as a monk, you have these kind of routines, it's pretty much the same every day, but what's going on in our mind is different every day. You know, it's different every moment. So this walk today through Colonel Danforth Park, my mind was in a totally, totally different than it was last week, you know, than it was the week before. Same walk, scenery's not much different, maybe same people, but we learn to turn our attention inwards, to savor what's going on inwards, to savor and delight in the developing of a skill in training our minds, then this is something that we carry with us, you know? Not just necessarily needing to lean forward always to the next amazing thing. So the Buddha gives this interesting analogy. He says, like imagine there is a farmer. Well, actually, I don't think this is the Buddha's analogy, but we can imagine this analogy anyway, that there was a farmer, you know, who wanted to grow some crops. And he plants a good seed in the soil, in fertile soil, and he waters the soil day after day, and he tends to it. He makes sure that there's no bugs on it, and then he waits. He just keeps paying attention to that seed, keeps watering it, keeps looking out for what it needs. Whether or not that farmer wishes, one day may I have some really good crops, the day will come when that farmer has really good crops. And that will be his peak moment, his or her peak moment, you know? In the same way, you know, whether or not somebody wishes, you know, may I have really good crops, if they plant a seed in poor soil, you know, if they don't water their seed properly, if they have a bad seed to begin with, you know, if they don't pick the bugs off the seed or off the plant as it grows, and if they don't tend to it carefully, whether they wish or not, their plants will not come to fruition in the right way. They won't reap a good harvest, you know. So a wise farmer, a person who wants to have a good harvest, what you see about them is they actually tend to start loving the work that they're doing. Some of these kind of farmers or people who live, they just like to garden. You know, they like the whole process. They like the pouring of the water. They like, you know, watering it. They, you know, maybe not love picking off bugs or whatever, but all of it becomes part of the process that they use in training their mind, in growing their garden. You know? All of it becomes part of having this fruit at the end. And it's the same thing with training our minds, you know. At the beginning, you know, it's something like it's not necessarily going to be flashy every day. Won't necessarily be the case that every time we sit down to meditate, we have the most spectacular meditation. We have the most kind of amazing time. You know? But as long as we pay a close attention, you know, is this plant growing or not? You know? Is it developing well? As long as we're careful to pick off the bugs, as long as we're careful to keep trying to eliminate unwholesome thoughts. As long as we're careful to water it every day, keep trying to cultivate wholesome thoughts and make them grow, then the day comes when we reap a fruit in our meditation. We reap the fruit of a happy mind. We reap the fruit of a mind that's well trained.
So when we learn to focus in this way, learn to take delight in the process, you know, the process of, say, training our minds, the process, like a farmer learns to delight in all the aspects of his farming, all the aspects of his gardening, because he knows what they lead to at the end, you know, then the day will come for us one day, you know, when we have this kind of ripe harvest. Like a student, the day will come for us. We keep studying every test, every day studying a bit more, every exam. The day comes for us when we have a graduation ceremony. The day comes for us when we get our apprenticeship certificate. You know? And this day is built up on all these little moments. So the Buddha gives an analogy. It's like a jar, like a big empty jar. And just like drop by drop, you know, actually, I was drying my robes the other day, and kind of you go to dry them, and there's these kind of drops of water that just fall off the robe. And in the same way, you know, you have a drop, like say you leave your tap a little bit open, you put a jar under it, drop by drop by drop, that fills up. You know, if you sit there watching it, like, when's it going to fill up? It can take a while. But just drop by drop, it keeps going. And then if you wake up in the middle of the night, it's full. And so in the same way, we can develop this attitude to our practice, you know, drop by drop, bit by bit, you know, watering the seed bit by bit, seeing how it goes, picking off the bugs bit by bit, until one day we have this, you know, we have this graduation ceremony, we have this kind of ripe harvest, we have this kind of jar that's full of kind of good thoughts, happy thoughts, a mind that's well-trained. And this is something that can bring us happiness regardless of where we are. Okay, so I think I'll leave that for your reflection.